Good morning. The markets are moving and so are you from the BizNews studios. This is BizNews Daybreak for Tuesday, the 9th of December, 2025. I'm Alec Hogg. Here's the context you need to win the day. Well, surprise, surprise, the takeover bid by Netflix of Warner Discovery is not a done deal. Netflix put a mammoth $82 billion on the table, was given the thumbs up by the board of Warner Brothers Discovery, but along comes Larry Ellison's son, who runs a company called Paramount, and he's tried a knockout hostile takeover bid of $108 billion. Here's Carol Mazar and friends at Bloomberg.
Takeover bid is getting just uglier by the day. Feels like something out of an episode of Succession. The latest is Paramount launched a hostile takeover bid for Warner Brothers at $30 a share in cash. This is just days after the company agreed to a deal with Netflix. The offer values Warner Brothers at $108.4 billion, including debt. This compares to Netflix's offer of $27.75 a share in cash and stock, for an enterprise value of about $82.7 billion. So it's getting really heated here. Warner Brothers investors deserve an opportunity to consider our superior call. That is what CEO David Ellison said in a statement. And of course, both bids are raising a lot of antitrust concerns. President Trump today spoke about it. He said that he has to kind of take a look at the deal and what the market cap of the final company will be in either scenario.
What does Polymarket say?
Polymarket was crazy, dude. Polymarket had 60% odds that this deal would close by the end of next year until Trump said he was worried about the market share and he wanted to get personally involved. Then they dropped to 23%.
It's incredible.
I would guess they're now in the teens.
Who will close Warner Brothers acquisition? 42% Paramount, 39% Netflix.
Interesting. Either way, this is going to change Hollywood and the media world.
Elizabeth Warren is against both combinations.
What a surprise.
Well, Netflix and Paramount are duking it out, and interesting to get those percentages of who might be successful in the end. The Americans seem to be betting on anything nowadays. NVIDIA is betting on, something even bigger. The Trump deal-making obsession. And as you'll hear, NVIDIA actually has won this round. It is going to be exporting chips to China. The share price of NVIDIA jumping 2% on the news.
President Trump has granted NVIDIA permission to ship its H200 artificial intelligence chip to China in exchange for a 25% cut of the sales. The decision marks a major lobbying win for NVIDIA. And with more, here's Bloomberg's Annabelle Droolers.
Permission to ship these H200 chips to China, it's something we've been discussing for weeks. We saw Jensen Huang just back in Washington even last week continuing his lobbying efforts. So on this front, it certainly is a win for the business.
Bloomberg's Annabelle Droolers. A federal judge has ruled President Trump's executive order banning new wind projects is, quote, arbitrary and capricious. And contrary to law, the order had effectively halted federal approvals of wind farms on land and sea, freezing dozens of clean energy projects and potentially impacting jobs and investments.
Well, Donald Trump's been really busy. He also yesterday granted another bonus to the U.S. farmers to help them to bring down food costs, or at least that's what he says. These non-tariff barriers are clearly not just America's rivals in the trade war that are able to provide them. Onto the markets now, and there is a growing uncertainty about the rate cut on Wednesday. It was a done deal, as so we thought yesterday, but so we also we thought yesterday that the takeover of Warner Brothers Discovery was a done deal for Netflix. Here's Charlie Pellett at Bloomberg.
Traders are growing anxious about next year's interest rate path. It was a down day on Wall Street, with the S&P 500 index slumping. As for the inflation outlook ahead of Wednesday's Fed decision, Kevin Gordon is head of macro research and strategy at Charles Schwab. He was interviewed on Bloomberg Businessweek Daily.
I think that the inflation backdrop is going to be a little bit trickier in the sense that there's probably some upside inflation risk from tariffs that are expected to stay high, which have already put upward pressure on goods prices, but also fiscal stimulus coming from the Big Beautiful Bill. And I think still a, even if it's a wobbly, but still relatively resilient labor market that keeps people spending on a month-to-month basis.
Kevin Gordon of Charles Schwab. On the Federal Reserve's final meeting of the year set to begin tomorrow morning, investors do expect the Fed to cut rates by a quarter point, its third cut this year at the conclusion of its two-day meeting. But messaging around the meeting is uncertain. A preview from Bloomberg's Michael McKee.
It appears from the way things have been set up that the chairman thinks that the labor market is still the biggest concern, and he is trying to corral the votes to get a another cut to help the labor market. What we might see is then the Fed announce it's going to basically take a pause in January and wait and see how things go, sort of a sop to those who believe that the Fed might be going too far.
Bloomberg's Michael McKee. Wednesday's rate decision, which happens at 2 p.m. Wall Street time, is unlikely to be unanimous. BHP Group is selling part of its 85% stake in a power network that fuels its iron ore operations in Australia to BlackRock's global infrastructure partners for $2 billion. Stocks fell with the S&P down 23, now at 68.46, down 0.3%. Dow Industrials down 0.4%. The NASDAQ Composite Index was down 0.1%.
Well, on the local front, the last of the big four banks, ABSA, released its trading update. We've had from Standard Bank, First Rand, and Nedbank. ABSA's numbers, very good. The market liked them a lot. This is for the 12 months to the end of December. Obviously, they're not definitive, but they do give you a, it's a voluntary, called a voluntary trading update, and gives you a very good understanding of where the bank's going to be coming in at. They've got more than 11 months of the year behind them. Share price was up 2.5%, and it takes the year-to-date increase to 17%. Headline story here, they are going to have earnings in low double-digit numbers. So that's growth of somewhere between 10 and 15%. And the credit loss ratio, though, is the real story. They had a big spike last year. That's coming down this year into falling back into the target range of roughly 75 to 100 basis points. The management say that it'll be towards the top end of that in 2025, but in 2026 towards the bottom end of that. So closer to 75 next year, and around closer to 100 in the year under review. Return on equities nudging 15% below the other big four banks, but still pretty respectable on a global basis. Also coming out with financial results yesterday, but these are full year numbers to the end of September, was Spar. Spar is a retailer that's gone through a pretty rough time. Year-to-date, share price is down 29%, and that despite a 2% improvement on the results that were released yesterday. The headline number is ugly. There was a massive 4.8 billion rand loss for the year, compares with a profit of 350 million the previous year, and this was driven entirely by the misadventure in Europe, where Poland and Switzerland, those two operations were closed down. They've retained their Irish operation, which is profitable, but Poland and Switzerland were bleeding. And as a consequence of that, out they go. The engine is still idling here in South Africa. Group revenue nudged up slightly to 133 billion rand. The group says that South African consumer is under pressure, but it will be able now to focus on the local operation, which is really where the majority of the revenues are generated. Of that 133 billion, it's roughly 100 billion in South Africa and 30 to 35 billion in Ireland. So it gives you an understanding of the scale of the group. The board at Spar have passed the final dividend. No dividend for shareholders. They want to conserve cash, and this in an effort to bring down the debt, which was halved in the year under review from almost 10 billion rand. Also coming out with financial results yesterday was Signia Limited. Market didn't like it, dropped the share by 4.5%. This, despite some pretty respectable numbers, if you look at them with the with an independent eye, this is for the year to end September. Assets under management grew by almost a third to 461 billion rand, and the after-tax profit was 10% higher. The growth was driven by resilient institutional inflows and a strong retail performance, where assets under management hit 90 billion rand. Signia rewarded its shareholders with a total dividend of 231 cents in the year, from 217 cents the year before. But as mentioned before, investors actually wanted more. Capitec has made another bolt-on acquisition. It likes to do these. Doesn't make the big calls, but 400 million rand. It sounds like chump change nowadays in the Capitec picture, where you have a market cap of 470 billion rand. So it's less than 0.1%. But this could be a real important one. The company's name is WalletDoc, and WalletDoc adds or focuses in, it's a fintech that focuses in making digital commerce flow. So it's a little bit of a back end, handling the messy middle of transactions, the online, in-app, instant EFTs, and those increasingly popular payment links that are sent via WhatsApp or SMS. The Capitec team didn't really make a big shout, song and shout about it, because it is just part of their whole filling in the pieces in the overall jigsaw. The share price at Capitec didn't react much. It's up 28% for the year as a whole. It was down by 1% yesterday. And finally, Pepkor now has an even bigger shareholder in the form of the PIC. News came out yesterday that the PIC, which is where the state, South African state employees' pension funds rest, has increased its stake in Pepkor from 15.5% to 20.2%. David Shapiro will be delighted. He's made Pepkor one of his top picks. He reckons they're on a bit of a rip. And apart from anything else, he's very impressed with the way they're moving into the digital financial field. Interesting that when we've just heard about Capitec consolidating their position there with WalletDoc. Pepkor's share price, however, was down by 2.6% on the news. Moving on to our top story today, as promised, I managed to catch up with the local chief executive of Amazon Sub-Saharan Africa. He's a South African, as you could imagine, from the name Robert Kuhn. And I asked him how things were going a year and a half in to Amazon coming into South Africa, given that they've got a very strong competitor here called Takealot.
Yeah, so we launched the online store in May of 2024. So it's just over a year. And, you know, we're getting amazing feedback from our customers who just love the experience, you know, love the speed of it, but also just the reliability of that delivery. And we're working continually just to enhance that, you know, all the time.
Has it achieved the milestones that you've set out? Because it is a pretty competitive area.
Oh, hell yeah. if I could use the technical term, we've knocked it out the park. We're very, very pleased with the performance, especially for Black Friday. Exceeded all our expectations. And I think most importantly is just the feedback from the customers has been fantastic. I spend a lot of time in our call centers working with the associates and, you know, looking at some of the feedback. But customers love the speed. They love the value for money, you know, just getting, you know, great deals and great general value across the entire store and just the experience overall. So great feedback. And we're very, very pleased with how it's going.
With all the stuff that's going on in politics and geopolitics and the noise that we see, including this week, how does that affect people, even if it's just around the water cooler?
You know, Alec, I really don't see the effect. You know, we are here again. The team is, we really, as a team, we obsess about looking at what's going on in the business, you know, running the business as it is. And I think, you know, there is a lot of noise out there, but it doesn't impact us. I think we do operate in many, many different countries around the world. And so we're very used to different politics, different geopolitical things happening from time to time. But the best thing we can do is just focus on delivering a great experience for our customer.
We've been hearing a lot about green shoots for the South African economy from the banks and other retailers. So I asked the SA boss of Amazon.com whether he is seeing this as well.
From what we see on the consumer side, our business is, as I said, we've knocked it out the park in Q4. It's exceeded expectations. I think there is a big move of South African customers onto online. As they're experiencing the great pricing and the convenience that comes with online, we're seeing that shift. And we're still, it depends on whose estimate you believe, but, you know, we're still potentially in single digit numbers of what part of retail is online when you compare it to some of the other countries. And so we've got there's a lot of room for growth. But I'm one of those optimistic South Africans. This is a great country with some amazing people, amazing skills. And we think long term about it. We've only just begun in this journey. There's a long way to go still.
The full interview with Mr. Kun is in the what we call director's cut. And you'll find that on biznews.com/briefing. Well, on to our next story, and this is a clip taken from my colleague Chris Stain's Sunday show, or the NDB Sunday show, named after the late Neil De Beer, and was one of Neil's very close friends. Dr. Michael Louis is the chairman of the Independent Candidates Association, and Chris asked him for his thoughts on the G20 and what could flow from it.
We were very blessed and honored to host the G20. And I think that the reports of what happened there is absolutely outstanding. And I think that they did come to a resolve of an agreement is outstanding. But I'm very much a proponent of substance over form. You know that whilst we've got the agreement, how much of it is going to be implemented? I think that's where I really would love to watch. There were huge capital injection promises made for South Africa, in particular. I'm just thinking of the Middle East that wanted to give a couple of billion for AI, and a number of other promises were there. It will be very interesting. And I do believe that the result of what the president, when he had that meeting with us as South Africans, he said everybody was impressed with the people. Well, we know that. We've got the most outstanding people, the most outstanding country. But that's not what we're wanting to hear. We're wanting to see us move forward. The second notion about the G20, which I think is really interesting. I attended a function of business leaders, and Christo Visa was one of the speakers. And Christo made a very interesting comment where he says, you need to know your place, you know. And so that really stuck with me, that I think even although there is this feud with the USA, it is very sad, very disappointing, and there's a lot of information there. But I think South Africa needs to know their place. And we cannot alienate one of the largest economies in the world. And so as a result, they're trying their diplomacy, but I don't really think it's working. But we must know our place and take it up properly.
Today's tailpiece features one of the most respected investors in the world. His name is Ray Dalio. He's with Bridgewater Associates, a hedge fund. And our partners at Bloomberg caught up with him this morning. He's in Abu Dhabi attending an investment conference. Some good news in this for Goldbugs.
I think it is the debt service, particularly the government position, in the supply demand of that debt, combined with the politics. What's happening in all of these governments is that they can't increase their spending because they can't increase their debt. And at the same time, they have the needs, more military spending and so on. And at the same time, they can't cut taxes. And so you're seeing a lot of political turnover. In the UK, they've had four prime ministers in the last 5 years. Same has been true in France. because there's not the ability to deliver on the economic promises that they're making. So I think it's the confluence of that economics, that situation, and the politics, the debt dynamics working with the politics, working then with this technology adding into it in a bit of a technology bubble.
So final question.
So that concerns me the most, and I would say particularly post 26.
Does that mean that you said recently that 15% allocation in gold and Bitcoin, do you still stand by that line?
I think that everybody should realize that gold is a type of money. It's not something to speculate in, just as you would hold cash. Mm. But other cash is a fiat money. And when you have debt, then the government needs to print money and make money easier, yeah, which lowers the value of that money. And so also to recognize that gold is a diversifier. When the other parts of the portfolio do badly because of some of the things we're talking about, gold will do better as a diversifier. So it has the effect in such times of raising the returns and diversifying the portfolio. A normal allocation would be between 5 and 15% if you just went into a portfolio optimizer.
And now you have the edge. For the full interviews and the details behind these stories, head over to biznews.com. I'm Alec Hogg. Thank you for starting your morning with us. Now go and seize the day.